those matches with Hogan, I'm going to tell you right now, they paid $10, $12, $15, $20,000 a fucking night.
And that's for house shows you're talking about.
Yeah. Not even talking pay-per-views. They paid probably $300,000, $400,000. I mean, the money, for Austin to say he drew more money than Hulk Hogan, I don't know what fucking books you were cooking, brother, but I'm going to tell you, you are not even in that fucking category. You're not even near that shit he was making. This guy, God damn it, give me a gun. This fucking guy, if you worked against him, we did nine shows a week. Twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday. How many is that? You got your five, nine shows. Okay, so if you're making $10,000 a match, that's $90,000, $100,000 a week. You got 6 months of that or a year of that? You guys do the math. I mean, I can't do it. Now, if we're making $10,000 a match, Hogan's making 13% of the gross. So if the Garden is doing $300,000, he gets 13%.
Was that the deal?
Yeah, the champion got 13%. Oh, okay. You guys do the math. I can't do it. It's too fucking much for me. We're talking okay, so now his merchandise. We're talking $8-10 million a year just to wrestle. We're talking about 8 or 10. Nobody sold more merchandise than I don't give a shit about Austin 316. Austin, you weren't in the catalog. The only way you could get a Hogan t-shirt, you had to go to the building and buy a ticket, or you ordered it through the catalog. You couldn't go to Walmart, Kmart, Circle fucking K, and get a goddamn Hogan t-shirt. It just wasn't possible. Well, I sold more shirts than him. Brother, what fucking planet are you living on? You didn't do dog shit compared to this guy. You're out there trying to hammer out a living in Hollywood. Hogan's got a reality show. His fucking kids are making $150,000 per episode.
Six a.m. day after
Christmas.
Do you
have songs about abortions?
Throw some clothes on by. It's a beautiful day. Don't let it get away.
You know that song's about quad tears.
Touch me.
Bono tore his quad. Wrote
Did you say it's about Obama tearing his quad? Is he okay?
Oh no, Obama's fine.
He was out hooping with the fellas. And tore his quad.
Took a couple bad steps, you know.
I got a lot of emotions going through me today, Nate.
I didn't leave the house all day, so all these emotions, I'm taking it that you did leave the house.
Yeah, I've been out in the world too much, I think.
Gross.
I need to take a few days off to just...
at all costs. Yeah. All costs.
I need a good, just Nate Adams hermit period, maybe.
Just like, yeah, just like
a couple days.
Matt on Matt solo bro down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds good, yeah.
Yeah. Watch weird movies.
Mm-hmm.
Take time for me.
Eat a couple Little Caesars Hot and Ready's.
Sunday, we got plans. I'm not doing that alone.
Okay.
That's a party.
That's not an alone thing. We got a Little Caesars.
We already said.
That's a party.
We already said two large pepperoni Hot and Ready's.
Uh-huh.
One pretzel pepperoni pizza.
This was all said at a bar while drunk.
And crazy bread, because you ain't going to Little Caesars.
Clearly, drunk or sober, you're making a plan. Yeah. You're not going without crazy bread. I remember going all in on this pepperoni and pretzel pizza.
Yeah.
You're the one who like kept adding Hot and Ready's to it. Just like a couple more. How about three Hot and Ready's? We're going to need probably like three or four
Hot and Ready's.
I said
one Hot and Ready, and somebody was like, let's get two of that.
We just wanted to try the gross-looking pretzel pizza, and then you turned it into this whole fucking
thing. Well,
I'm going
to eat dinner at this party as well.
Okay.
So I got to have something. I don't think I can make a meal out of pretzel pizza.
How many Hot and Ready's can you eat for dinner, do you think?
I could put down at least one myself.
Put down one yourself?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
I'll at least eat a half of one.
That's probably only like 2,000 calories.
But
so
like
I'm sure
if I went hard, I could put away a whole one.
Oh, we're going hard if it's a party.
I go hard.
If you put the words pizza and party together, yeah, there's no true. Like, oh, I'm not going hard.
What about pizza pretzel
party?
Decided
not to go hard. Pizza pretzel party's never been done before. This is a first ever. It's borderline Theo Huxtable's bacon burger dog,
yeah.
I feel like.
What movie do we watch with this Is it a Nick Cage joint? Is it a JCVD joint?
Ooh.
Like, what's the theme here? Like a Street Good Fighter question. The movie?
Street Fighter the movie's terrible. I do not want to watch that.
But, like, think about it. Like, when you watch that movie, like, that was, you were getting Little Caesars that weekend.
If I was going, like, a throwback nostalgia thing, I think I'd want to do a couple Steven Seagal joints. Like, maybe a Glimmer Man. I don't know. Throw a Glimmer Man in there.
What's the one he did with DMX? Should we watch that one?
Oh, yeah. That might have been Glimmer Man.
Fire Down Below or Glimmer Man? It's one of the two.
Yeah.
Oh,
I just want to see like some mid-career, getting pretty chubby, definitely dying his hair now, Steven Seagal, still like breaking guys' elbows over his shoulders.
Right. But he's wearing the Filipino casual dress shirt.
Sure, absolutely.
The barong. I believe it's called the barong.
It's very flowy. Nobody's going to see what my physique looks like now.
It's not a real color.
As far as anyone's concerned.
It's not a real color.
I'm totally shredded.
To frame up my fat face.
Hey, it's What's me. Up? It's your boy.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
Matt O. With me as always. Who should you be today?
This day?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't have any tag team matches in our show today for you to pull off of, so I guess maybe...
You want to be Mustafa to my New Jack?
That makes perfect sense to me, because you got a lot of emotions going through you. I've got a lot of scars on my forehead.
Yeah.
We should be Mustafa to New Jack. That's us right now.
All
right. We're feeling the gangsters.
You're
going
Mustafa
into the show.
To my New Jack. You are Nate Adams.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. It's good to be here for this episode of Baby Oil and Blow, especially because we're watching an episode of WCW that's so truncated, there wasn't even any tag matches on it that we could fucking reference in this little bit that we always do.
They were like, hey, you know, Bobby, Arn, we got room for one of you. Flip a coin.
If there's anything that's going to get you back on the straight and narrow, back on the even keel after this hellacious day of being out in the world, adulting is the kids in their 20s say now. I was adulting all day, so it was real exhausting. It'll be a not-so-exhausting WCW, but before we go into that, we've definitely got to talk about the modern wrestling news of the week, because that's something that we've shoehorned in here.
Yeah.
I'm nothing if not a slave to the format. So
as The Rock says in the Disney classic, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's the Disney classic Fighting With My Family, which I saw the other day.
Did you see it?
Talk about that.
Did you really see it?
I did. Yeah.
Give me some thoughts, real quick. Yeah, let's go ahead.
It's very mediocre.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like it's not bad at all, but it's just a movie that like goes out of its way to be not offensive.
Kind of amusing because Stephen Merchant wrote it, so there's some
that's kind of what I thought.
Fun dialogue in there.
Yeah.
Lena Headey and Nick Frost have some good chemistry as a trashball parents.
Lena Headey, what's she been in? What joints?
She's Cersei Lannister. She was Mama in that Dread joint.
What's Cersei Lannister?
From Game of Thrones.
Nope.
Don't pretend like you didn't see Dread with fucking Mama.
Yeah, that one I was like, okay, great. I know who you're talking about.
She was Sarah Connor in the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, yeah. Hey, good for her.
She's a great little actress.
She is. She's decent. I like her.
Basically, it was a 90-minute infomercial for the WWF, which was really weird. Or WWE, sorry. I get caught into this retro throwback thing we do on this show. Yeah. They really just, like, completely changed who Paige was to try and make her a heroic, center character of a movie, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Like, in this movie, like... She's real small. She's smaller than all the other girls, which is like not a thing in real life.
Yeah, she was just as tall as all
the other
ones. In
this movie, she's just like this mousy little like fucking English girl, and all the girls are like just beautiful, which is ridiculous because Paige is fucking smoking hot. So
that's
not something she had to overcome whatsoever.
AJ, her foil in the movie was the mousy one.
And also AJ's played by fucking... What's her face?
Vega.
Selena Vega, they're calling her now, who's like 6 inches shorter than even the tiny girl they had playing Paige. So like, and that big climactic finish of the movie where like it's AJ Lee, quote unquote, versus her, like suddenly she's no longer
AJ Brooks, you dick.
She's no longer that underdog because you know, now she's 6 inches taller than the girl. They try and like spin it like, oh, the fact that she's the daughter of two longtime promoters in England is like a huge knock against her and not just like a huge, you know, like plus, hey, like, yeah, everybody knows who you are.
We're going to give you a push. You have
tons of ins very easy. Yeah. Just, like, so many little things where it's just like, well, this is not really Paige's story at all. It's just a generic underdog story. Yeah. And the whole fact that they, like, sort of slathered a veneer of, like, Paige's life on it as an aesthetic choice is, I feel like, just a pretty good indication of what great carnies the Knight family is, to just, like, get their name put on this and probably get some paychecks from it when it didn't need to be them at all. They could have just, like, changed the names had it been about, like, somebody who's not real, and it would have been the exact same movie.
Paycheck.
All right. Exact same movie. Here's the real question that everybody wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the deal breaker of whether I and everybody else go sees this
Nobody
movie.
Nobody shows their tits.
No. Who would I rather see getting plowed in real life by Xavier Woods and Brad Maddox?
Okay. The girl playing Paige?
Or real Paige?
Oh, definitely real Paige. Real Paige is hotter.
So I'm not going to see this movie.
No, definitely.
So I'm not.
This girl's like kind of like got a cute factor that, like, you know, people out there in movie theaters can be like, oh, she's cute, she seems nice. Where Paige is like, oh, that girl's trashy, which is much more appealing.
So I would much rather watch. So we're clear.
Uh-huh.
A video of Paige sticking a toy up her poop chute, talking to Alberto Del Rio, being like, trying to get this ready for you because I know this is a thing you want. Let me know what you think.
I think she's talking to Brad Maddox in those videos. Let's be clear.
Oh, what?
These are all from back when she was dating Brad Maddox.
Okay, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. Well, it's cool that Brad Maddox was pushing anal.
Yeah, but he's also a cuck who likes to watch all his friends fuck his girl and videotape it, which if Trump supporters have taught us anything, you don't be a fucking cuck. That's the lamest thing you could be. Yeah.
Gotta go strong. Gotta
fucking
go hard.
Snowflake.
The big dog's back.
Okay, this is another bit of modern wrestling news we can talk about this week. I'm gonna make a prediction right now. My prediction is this week's Raw far higher ratings than any other Raw they've done in months.
Yeah, yeah.
Because as you just said, Roman Reigns coming back. Also, I've seen Ric Flair's 70th birthday party celebration. Tonight, neither of those things, I think, are blockbuster things that are going to be like, move the ratings, like, oh, everybody's going to want to see this.
Yeah.
Key difference here, first time in years I know what's going to happen on a Raw before the Raw happened.
Yeah.
They're so desperate now.
Hey, maybe I'll watch that.
They're so desperate now.
They're giving it away.
They've broken glass. They've gone to the emergency tactic of promoting what's going to be on their show. You know, the base level, most simplest thing everybody should be fucking doing who has a wrestling TV show.
You're like, this show's so wild, who knows?
Promote what's going to happen fucking next week so people have a reason to show up. They've done it for the first time in years. My prediction, based on that alone, the fact that I know what's going to be on a Raw and I haven't known in years.
What do they pop? They pop like a 3-point something?
I don't even have any clue where they are at this point, week to week or anything like that.
That's fair.
So I don't know. I'm just going to say above what they've been doing. Because from what I understand of all the sturm and drang on the internet is that ratings are in the toilet and getting worse every week. I'm saying a little uptick this week just because, hey, you remembered how to fucking promote.
Yeah. A lot of things. Man, you're leading me down a lot of things here. So Roman Reigns is back. He's in remission.
Isn't that what he's going to be announcing what's going on with him? Did he already announce
it? Yeah, he announced.
Okay, so he was there.
First things first. He announced in remission. Mm-hmm. And he just left back in October, which makes me think maybe it was all fake.
I don't know. It's very weird. I've never known anybody have such a short battle with fucking leukemia.
That's what I'm saying.
Unless, like, they didn't tell us about it until he was, like, far into the... But then you got to think, like, well, they had him out there wrestling and shit, like, up until he... So, like, was he wrestling during his treatment
for a while?
Like,
I saw
so, that's insane.
I saw those pictures of him while he was filming that fucking...
He's in that new Rock movie.
Yeah, he's in the new Rock movie, and he didn't look that much smaller.
Yeah, okay. So they didn't make him get off roids while doing his treatments.
There's just a lot of questions here. When was he sick? My main question.
If it eventually comes out that this Roman Reigns thing was a last-ditch ultimate carny effort to get
people to like him?
We have to get people to like him.
Because he got...
Nothing has worked.
He got a huge ovation tonight.
Okay, this has to be ultra double-secret probation, just fucking on the lowdown. we're going to fake cancer. Like, if they do that, like, any bad thing I've said about Vince McMahon or the WWE in the last 10 years, I will take it all back. I will give them so much respect if they try to fucking carny work a fake cancer of, like, a famous person. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
And I don't want to say they did, but I'm not going to say they didn't.
It doesn't add up, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I just have questions about the timeline.
Something about all this, most of all this, actually, if you think about it, doesn't add up.
He took a biopsy, Jerry. A biopsy.
What'd he say?
He said he didn't know what it was.
All right, so?
Well, when I asked him if it was cancer, he didn't give me a get out of here. That's what I wanted to hear. Cancer? Get out of here.
Well, maybe he doesn't have a get out of here kind of personality.
How could you be a doctor and not say get out of here? You should be part of the training at medical school. Cancer? Get out of here! Go home! What are you, crazy? It's a little test. It's nothing. You're a real nut. You know that?
Next segment.
Let's get into the rundown. This week, we're doing a rundown of the April 25th.
The rundown.
1992 episode of WCW Saturday Night. Back down there in the land of Atlanta. This week we have, as we said, a truncated show.
That's right.
Must have been a big night for Atlanta Braves baseball or something.
Some shit. Who's our big sponsor
our
tonight?
Our big sponsor tonight is...
Little Caesars pretzel
definitely
pizza?
Definitely Little Caesars. Limited time only right now. You got
get
pretzel
in there,
crust.
Folks.
What is it? Nacho cheese is the sauce?
With cheese sauce, not
okay,
nacho.
So a cheese sauce instead of a red sauce?
Yeah.
Then you got your standard mozzarella cheese and some pepperoni.
Sure.
Is that what they're putting on this?
That's it.
Drunk at the bar the other night, we saw
a
commercial
crust.
For it. We said we wanted it. So we reached out to Little Caesars.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're going to send you a couple free ones, a couple free hot and readies, as long as you talk about it on your show.
So
thank you, Little Caesars.
And then tune in next week
pizzas,
to see if
I'm
we
sure
still endorse
are delicious.
It.
I'm sure they were hot and ready. No, we'll definitely endorse it. I've already spent that money, Matt.
Oh, okay. My mistake.
Yeah.
That's how it works?
First match. Scotty Flamingo, he's in there versus Firebreaker Chip.
Who?
Yeah. This guy was never one of my favorite WCW jobbers.
Yeah.
Scotty Flamingo wins it with a pile driver. Next match, Nikita Koloff is in there against a believable Russian accent.
Yeah, that was a match.
Believable Russian accent goes over strong. Nikita really jobs out.
Absolutely.
They did a long interview segment where he was trying to keep up a casual fucking conversation with Jim Ross, Matt.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was hard to get through.
Huh.
Nikita Koloff cannot do an accent. Our next match, AA Arn Anderson, representing the Dangerous Alliance, is in there versus job guy named Larry Santo, kind of dressed like Santa Claus, which was fun. Some red and green action going on in those tights.
Good.
Santo, Santa, you read between the lines. Arn wins with his big old spine buster. Best spine buster in the business. It was real quick. Heyman's vocal cords got more of a workout than Arn did.
That's true.
Arn didn't break a sweat out there, and he's a sweaty guy. Main event, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you're not hearing this wrong. This is the third match we've got on a WCW show, and this is already the last match we're talking about. It's a goddamn miracle. 2 out of 3 falls. For the TV title, champion Steve Austin in there versus challenger Barry Windham. First fall, Windham gets it with a float over suplex. Second fall, TV time runs out, match is over. Even though he got pinned, Austin keeps the title. Because, it's a 2 out of 3 falls match. If you don't get fucking 2 falls, you can't get the title.
Yeah, you're a loser.
Fucking Barry Windham might as well have just lost the match. Doesn't even matter. Get out of here. Show's over. Now we move into the 5 count. Matt. Thinking about this show and all the things you saw, what's one of the main talking points you had coming out of this that you really thought we needed to discuss on this show, Baby Oil and Blow?
Oh, like if I had like 5 things to talk about, what's the first thing I'd talk about?
Give or take 5, yeah.
Give or take 5, okay. First thing I want to talk about is, again, and it's been a theme since we've moved to 1992 here, the overall presentation of this show.
Okay, yeah.
I'm going to tell you right now, we give a lot of credit to the Superstars format.
Superstars, solid pro wrestling show.
I'd say.
Maybe the greatest pro wrestling show of all time.
This was the even better version of that.
Oh, shit, dude.
WCW really figured it out when they accidentally had to put everything into 1 hour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They put over some important programs. They touch slightly on some less important programs.
Didn't worry about getting everyone on the roster onto the show.
They did a couple of enhancement matches, and they had one big main event.
There you go. That's it how you structure a wrestling show.
You had an important talking segment, the Koloff, you know, sit-down interview.
Bad choice for you who's still doing the talking.
The magazine segment where we run down everything and get over some
Eric
other...
Eric Bischoff's no Sean Mooney.
Yeah. But either way, it worked. Mm-hmm, it was a working format. You fit everything you needed in an hour. And I understand maybe an hour format doesn't work for wrestling anymore because even NXT is starting to feel cramped at an hour. But if you
it doesn't have to, though.
If you use the time
right...
If they
stop signing guys, it wouldn't have
if
to.
If you use the time right...
You don't
right,
need to have 40 dudes on contract to have a wrestling
that's
promotion.
That's also true. But the point is, no show needs 3 hours.
Oh, that's been made abundantly clear.
Yeah. So this worked for me. I liked it.
I gotta say,
I thought it felt really
one,
good.
The one complaint I still have about the format of this show, get fucking JR down there ringside, sitting at a desk. Quit putting him in the middle of the ring, sitting in a stool with no desk or anything, protecting the lower half of his body. He looks fucking uncomfortable and weird the whole time. There's no reason to set up like a late night Arsenio Hall-esque talk show in the middle of the ring for JR just to like go through the rigmarole of like throwing to segments and whatnot. Yeah. It's weird. Just put him at the desk ringside. That's where announcers belong.
It's true, because he can give you the same kind of look and everything that, like, when they toss it up to the booth in a football game or a baseball game where it's like, here we are waist up, and I do, like, a casual kind of lean towards the camera and point a little bit.
That's
like,
natural. It's sports-oriented. It's not some sort of, like, I stumbled on some weird talk show that's happening inside of a wrestling ring. Why?
Yeah. Oh, God, that fucking music they pipe in because they don't have the rights to whatever the original Saturday night music was.
Whatever's going on, the audio issues are just
it's so
all
loud
in this fucking
episode
especially
a guest commentator that was a dude from the Falcons.
Okay, my number one is they're doing this rotating guest host thing.
Okay, you're ready,
and they need to fucking quit,
right?
Because Dusty was on last week, it was fine. Dusty and JR have good chemistry. This is my number one. Is one of the main problems with WCW constantly throughout their existence is that they were owned by Turner Broadcasting, and Turner Broadcasting was constantly cross-promoting their shit and just pushing it in the way of what WCW is doing and being terrible. Some dude from the Atlanta Falcons,
Bill Fraley,
never spoke on camera before in his life.
No.
He can't come on and co-host your fucking TV show, especially when it's the highest rated show on your fucking network.
Oh, but the people like him in the locker room.
You don't fucking stuff some big dumb jock in a suit and have him try to be a fucking host of a talking head host
of
a TV show.
But he was thinking about being a wrestler.
He's okay. That never panned out. So that was a lot of weird talk. Oh. Was that like real like contract negotiating shit he was trying to pull? Like, hey, you don't give me the money I want,
Atlanta
Falcons.
Yeah, I think he was sweating
like,
somebody.
JR, just go along with what I'm saying. Like, I'm going to be a wrestler, right? Oh, yeah, you could totally be a wrestler. Yeah. That'd be interesting. Yeah, so what we said about that extra million?
JR, what are you going to do? Tell on me? Bro code.
Either way, every time it seemed like WCW had figured something out, whether it was creative direction or whether it was the format of their show or whatever, Turner Broadcasting had to stick their nose in some way and just throw a wrench into the works, man.
It's still
a little
TV
wrench
show,
there into
damn
the
it.
Works. So that was my number one.
Oh, okay. And my number two isn't until the WCW segment. Is there anything you want to talk about before
WCW
that? Or the magazine.
The magazine. Okay.
Eric Bischoff's magazine segment.
My number two came about when I was watching that Firebreaker Chip.
Yeah, your boy.
Scotty Flamingo match. And it just became apparent when I was watching it. One thing that has changed here in 1992, post-Turner buyout WCW from the days of Jim Crockett Promotions, is that the roster is starting to look a whole lot different. And I'm not just talking about new faces. I'm talking about visually. It's starting to look a whole lot different. Uh-huh. All these young guys they're bringing in, they're fucking young. They're roided up. They look like fucking athletes. You're not getting all these guys that are like, yeah, he's doughy and he looks like whatever, but he can fucking go in the ring. Your fucking Bobby Eaton types or even your like Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard types are getting faded out for dudes who look like they should be on WWF television because they're fucking roided, they're tanned, they're making an effort to look like actual fucking superstars or pro athletes.
You know what the other thing is?
Uh-huh.
They also all have a little bit of fire.
Yeah.
As opposed to anytime they'd parade out like a new guy in WCW in 86, 88, they'd all just be like looking down at their shoes like, oh, jeez, oh, boy.
Dead-eyed hillbillies,
just,
man.
That's just so
dead-eyed hillbillies.
Nice to be here. Oh, shucks.
So I feel like this is a thing that WCW generally gets shit on. They started trying to be more like the WWF. They turned their back. But some of it worked out, man, because say what you will about this approach to bringing in guys who look more TV fucking appropriate.
Polished, yeah.
Look more in shape. A lot of these guys turn out to be great fucking wrestlers. We're talking like Kevin Nash. We're talking Brian Pillman. We're talking fucking Scotty Steiner coming in.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, Scotty Hall coming in. Like,
sure.
Sure, these guys don't all pan out in WCW, but just because they look fucking great don't mean they can't be badass wrestlers.
Right.
You don't have to be like a fucking mulleted southern doughy weirdo to be a good fucking wrestler. Yeah. There's a medium ground here. There's a middle path to walk.
In this WCW magazine segment, though. Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I've got one from that, too. So let's segue us into it with your number three.
You get some decent things here. You even get a TaylorMade Man.
He's USA Tag Champions with our boy Greg the Hammer Valentine, wrestling's Robert Mitchum.
It was the only time I'd ever seen it. He even showed a little fire in his promo.
Yeah, but it still sucked.
It was his best work I've ever seen him do, though.
He's got that knockoff $1 million man tuxedo he's wearing, too.
Cool.
Just like, I'm not the Red Rooster anymore. Now's my time to shine.
Yeah.
Nope. You were born bland, you'll die bland, Terry Taylor.
I'm star. You got Vader, your boy Vader.
Vader.
Yelling at shit.
Yelling, very, I felt like he believed what he was saying. He recently injured Sting. He was very happy to injure Sting. But he came off a bit like a big baby to me. Like just a big goofy baby.
Yeah.
Like not entirely intimidating.
No.
So I'm like, get this guy a manager.
Right.
Luckily, they do very soon.
Exactly what I was thinking. And then I was like, oh, wait, yeah, they did get him a manager really quickly after this. So apparently, they saw it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just kind of comes off like a big overgrown baby, I feel like.
Like, it was good for a second, and then for 5 seconds, it would be really bad. Mm-hmm. And then it'd be good for a second again.
I like how much he likes injuring people. That's a plus
that's a
for
good,
a pro
that's
wrestler.
That's a great thing to hang your hat on.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be like a monster heel. What else did we have? Oh, Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, he got bleeped
being too
a lot.
Hot for TV.
He was cussing a lot and getting bleeped. That was something you didn't see every day.
Even though he clearly wasn't swearing.
Turner programming.
If you watch his mouth.
Well, I got to assume just his promo sucked so bad in post. They're like, you know what we could do to jazz this up?
Bleep
everything he's saying. Because, you know, he's probably using all those lame DDP-isms, like when he puts the word scum before everything and thinks it's like a sweet burn.
My hit, my real hit for this segment was what WCW always does best, and that's viewer write-ins.
Okay, this is slipping my memory. What happened with a viewer write-in?
Well, Eric Bischoff lets us know.
Were you talking about somebody asked Steve Austin a question?
Yeah.
Is that what we were throwing to? Okay, yeah, this was the framework to go into a Steve Austin interview.
Luis Gleesman
asks,
hey, you know, Stone Cold, why do you got to be with the Dangerous Alliance? Mm-hmm. Like, you could be better if you just went by yourself and followed the rules.
Why you don't cheat? Like,
yeah, just
you don't need it, man.
You don't need
it. I believe in you.
And Stone Cold, or excuse me, Stunning Steve says, Luis, you silly bag.
It's the first time I've ever heard bag used as an insult. Like,
does he mean you silly douchebag?
Or like you old bat? Or
yeah,
I think like he was going for one of the two and it just sort of like combined into one.
Yeah. Like anytime I've heard somebody called a bag, it's like I'm shortening douchebag. This guy's a real bag. And then he just goes off to be like, I'm already great and I got a title, blah, blah, blah.
I ain't been fined. Yeah. I ain't been stripped of my TV title.
Yeah. And he finishes it with, that's a stupid question.
It was a very stupid question. If the man hasn't been fined, he hasn't been stripped of his TV title, like, why would he start, quote unquote, following the rules?
It was good TV. I liked it.
My little note from this WCW magazine segment hosted by Eric Bischoff goes back to something I said the last time when we were watching this, and I was... I was saying that 92 Eric Bischoff just looks weird to me, and yeah. I feel like there's something going on with his mouth, and it looks like he's got too many teeth. It looks like he's got Andre the Giant teeth.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was getting that same thing this week when I was just looking at him, just staring at him. I was like, what's going on? And I realized as I was watching it, that I was getting flashes to Tom Hanks in the movie Philadelphia. And I feel like 1992 Eric Bischoff looks like 1996 Eric Bischoff if he got AIDS.
I was going to say.
That's what's going on here.
He looks thinner in this.
He's definitely.
He's not as filled out.
He's definitely got full-blown AIDS in 1992. Whoa. I feel like he recovered by 96, which is way before like the first fucking, you know, people we got in the news that fully recovered from AIDS. So I got to say there's something going on where the government was covering that up for a long time, probably.
Streets of Philadelphia.
Eric Bischoff beat it, man. Bischoff beat it.
Ooh, la, 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 la. That's a good song.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Did you watch those Oscars last night?
I did not.
Speaking of great songs
and
movies.
Not.
Not a one?
Not a single second. I saw some of the Twitter blowback, and that was about it.
The Favorite, you like that movie?
I did.
That won a couple trophies.
Olivia Colman won for Best Lead Actress, which I find very strange because... Fuck the Oscars.
I got a number three.
Ethan Hawke, Best Actor, wasn't even nominated. Okay, going to your next one? Three? I thought we'd gotten deeper into this fuck.
I don't know. Maybe it's a four. No, it's a three. And this is going to be agree to disagree. I kind of like the Koloff segment.
Okay, my number four is about the Koloff segment. So maybe we won't disagree about this. I've got positive things to say about it as well.
He could have been... a real superstar if you hadn't made that asshole yell his entire career.
See, the thing that I heard, though, is that he wasn't made to do that. No one, not only did no one else understand why he did it, he was asked many times to stop doing it and would never fucking do it.
Okay, so you're directing TV, you're in charge of the book, whatever it is. Quit pushing his ass if he's not going to stop doing it.
I agree wholeheartedly. Especially when you're this deep into the you're no longer an evil Russian guy, you're now like friend to America thing. Does Kofi Kingston still talk in a Jamaican accent?
Nope.
No. Switch up your character, man.
He came
shave
out there,
off those rough edges.
And like he was doing a little bit of it, but he sounded more like he was like from California. It was like, this is weird, but like I kind of want to listen to you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the crowd was fucking behind him. The
crowd was always behind him.
And it wasn't piped in at all. Like, it wasn't like
just
some post-production
those early
bullshit.
Early years of booking him so strong just solidified it in people's minds that this guy's a star. And back then, that's all it took. Once they decided, like, that's it. You're done. You're fucking on top forever.
These people were behind him. And, like, he's giving these answers. And it's like, he still sounds like he's kind of like, just like, oh, no, I swear I'm being good, but, like, clearly he's a heel. And it's like, wait, which is it? I don't even know which one to believe anymore.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
I don't really remember where they go with his character from here.
Okay, so,
or he, like, disappears again soon, doesn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't last much longer after this.
Where was he beforehand?
They're doing, like, a will-they, won't-they thing with him and Sting. Like, because the last time he was around, him and Sting were at odds. Now there's a couple times where he's, like, looked like he was going to clothesline Sting, but then Sting ducked and he hit somebody else, and it was like, who was he really trying to hit? So, like, he never really goes back to being a total bad guy from what I remember. I think he just fades out or something. He's in and out with injuries and shit at this point, and eventually he's out forever, but... what I'm saying about this is the basic storyline of it I like. I like the idea that him and Sting got a fierce rivalry and he went too far and he put a chain around his fucking arm, old school style, Russian evil Nikita, and he fucking sickled Sting right in front of a little boy that Sting was talking to.
In front of Big Ben.
The little boy was terrified and the little boy was crying because he thought that he was going to get sickled next, and that touched Nikita deep in his heart, and he realized he had gone too far, and he's to turn over a new leaf because he scared this kid. I think it's a great, like...
he's gone to Big Ben's house many a time,
it's
though.
It's a great storyline of how, especially in this era, maybe even a little bit better a couple years before this, but still works in this era, I think, of
if you
how
would have
to
done
turn
it in like 90,
a bad guy
like 1990,
into a good guy. Like, I think at the time, WWF would have had, like, the focus on their storylines if they were doing this to do it a lot better. And I think if you got anybody who is better at cutting promos than Nikita, this could have been, like, really fucking good. Like, if you get somebody who was a good talker, who, like, the fans believed in, like, as a tough guy, even though they hated him, and have him go through this storyline, I think you could have built a huge fucking babyface off of this.
Like an Arn Anderson.
Yeah, sure. I was thinking, like when the Big Boss Man, like, first turned good guy in WWF. Yeah. I thought they did a really good job with that, and this sort of reminded me of it. And I was like, if you put a guy like Boss Man who could cut good promos and shit in this role, like, I think he would have done a lot better with just it.
Made big money.
Yeah, good storyline. Probably not the best guy for it.
He lost his wife in 89.
All I really know about him is he became like a preacher at some point and like got all teetotaled and stuff, so I don't know.
In 88, he changed his name to Nikita Koloff legally.
Yeah, I gotta bing the end of Nikita's career because it's all a blur to me.
Let me know when you want to do Baby Oil and Blow at the TVs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've done, you know, the big screens.
Sure.
When you want to do the TVs and we cover our first wife swap with a wrestler in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we do the Nikita Koloff one.
Oh, so he was on a wife swap.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I was talking about the Roddy Piper, Rick.
That's
Flair
a celebrity wife swap.
So they did not acknowledge him as being a former celebrity.
They're like, he's done. They're like,
a wife swap.
They're like, this big dude used to be a professional wrestler. Mm-hmm.
What kind of person did he swap wives with?
I don't remember what he ended up with. I just remember how hot his daughters were.
We're definitely going to have to review
Colby
that shit then.
And
a girl named Colby. That's kind of nice.
I got it somewhere here.
That's rare. Wait, you got it in your notes Colby what his daughter's Kendra. Names are?
Colby and Kendra. Well, because my first thought was he brings that little girl into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's just got to be one of his daughters that grew up to be smoking hot later.
I imagine it has to be one of his daughters to get a girl that tiny out there that wasn't terrified of
that guy.
Yeah.
It had to be somebody else's daughter, though, because his daughters were born in 92 and 96. Too young and slutty.
Maybe it was that football guy's daughter.
Could have been.
Could have been.
Bill Fraley?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the one.
You said that was your four, so sure. I got a four.
Catch up, buddy.
I was watching that Arn Anderson. Larry Santos match. Yeah. Later in the evening, we get a little Stone Cold or a little Stunning Steve in the broadcast.
Still got those
flowing
locks. Got to call him Stunning.
And we've talked about
it. Boy, is he pretty.
Like, he's got the hair, and then the hair just starts looking bad. And then finally,
real bad.
He gets to WWF, and they're like, just fucking shave your head, bro. Yeah.
Get rid of that mess.
And he grows a goatee, and he just turns into like what we know as like the greatest wrestler of all time.
Stone Cold Steve Austin is essentially a cartoon character. He's one of those people that isn't even a human anymore.
Right.
Like, it's just bald Stone head, Cold. Goatee, iconic shit.
Like, from 97 on, whenever you saw a dude with a bald head and a goatee, he was trying to mock or ape that Stone Cold look.
For sure.
Because it was cool.
And here in Indiana, there was a lot
of them. There was a lot of them. There still are.
There's still a lot of them.
There still are. But it was a thing. And I'm watching this Arn Anderson match, and I'm watching him go on the ring. It just, we've always admired his in-ring work.
So much.
And I'm looking, and I'm looking.
And his chubby body.
And he comes out in those fucking glasses, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the glasses off.
Man, they look cool.
But he's still got that fucking dad hair. And it's like,
on top.
It's like, this is
not
90.
Not much left on top.
This is 92 here.
Mm-hmm.
Just when, like, images started being important.
Yeah.
Like, you know why Hogan had a second run? It's because he turned to a bad guy and put black in his beard.
Sure, sure, yeah.
If he would have kept that fucking look his entire career, eventually people would be like, you look like a fucking turd, bro.
Also, this is just, I feel like, a couple years before white guys shaving their head became a thing.
Right.
Like, before, like, the time when Stone Cold did it around that time, nobody would do it. So much so that they used to have hair versus hair matches because like a white guy getting his head shaved was just like, oh, he's gonna look like an idiot. Nobody has a shaved head. What a fucking humiliating insult that would be.
If
Arn would have came up in a later fucking era where he could have shaved off his dad hair and maybe looked a little bit more like a badass, maybe he could have got higher up on that card.
If he just would have done like the Bruce Willis, like kind of a beard and some stubble, like
just taper into a decent beard, but then he just got stubbly head, 5 o'clock shadow head.
Oh man, he would have been huge,
get
dude.
A Jason Statham look going on, Aaron Anderson. You don't got to look so much like a dad.
He could have left all the chest hair and the body hair, like you would have been.
I am a longtime appreciator of his dad look.
Oh yeah,
maybe not the most mainstream thing, but for a certain niche of bear fanatics over here, we love it.
Yeah, if you could have done more with his head, though.
Also, rest in peace, Arn Anderson's wrestling career. How about that guy getting fired 1 week before Ric Flair's birthday celebration?
Not even a week.
He must have really pissed off Vince somehow, huh? They didn't even wait till next week so they could use him on the Ric Flair's birthday celebration segment.
Yeah.
Number 5.
Is it the Steve Austin match?
Steve Austin versus two out of three falls main event. Overall,
take it away.
I got a few things I like to say about this match.
Let's lay into it.
First off, this studio setup they're wrestling in, I love it because it's just loud as fuck. Because these seats, they're right up next to the ring, and they just go straight up. These are like the steepest bleachers you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You just got a wall of people. So when they start screaming,
really fucking
it's
works.
Just a wall of sound that just surrounds the fucking match. And they're into this match, so like it just hits you, and you're like, oh, this is a great setup for studio wrestling. Maybe the best I've ever seen.
It's still small to where you can keep that passion in there, but at the same time, there's enough people to where it doesn't look completely dead.
Yeah.
And it makes it look like a big enough
event.
Get
them all stacked up on top of each other. That's the difference.
Yeah.
It's probably the same amount of people that was in there and like the Jim Crockett fucking taping.
Could have been.
It's just set up better. Either way, great match. Two really athletic guys. One spot I really loved early on, and they're doing their early like feeling out chain wrestling stuff. Austin's got that head scissors and he's just digging it on Barry. Barry does that sweet move where he's sort of on his knees. He's in a head scissors, so he puts his hands on Austin's knees, and he's pushing him down, trying to break it.
Uh-huh.
And he does a little bit of a headstand.
He
nips right out of it.
Yeah.
I always love that fucking reversal. But he puts an extra stank on it when after he nips out of it, he just slaps Austin across the face. And
so he does it twice. It's the second one he does.
Casual fucking just like slap to the face ever. And Austin's just heating up and he's just fucking pissed.
Yeah.
And Barry's just pushing him. And these guys just keep getting more and more just visibly frustrated with each other, but visibly more intense in the ring and visibly more aggressive. Two great fucking wrestlers. I loved watching these guys go at it.
Yeah, this was some good shit right here. Wyndham was starting to look a little chubby at this point.
This was...
he was always chubby. He was never like a...
Famously, he's always one of the best natural athletes ever, and also one of the best natural partiers ever.
Yeah, and this is...
And this is when not working out because you're a natural athlete and also partying every night was starting to show on him.
Correct, yeah. His belly's a little wider. His tits are a little saggier.
Starting to get that Chris Hero thing
going
on.
His face is a little fatter.
Where he can still move and he can still do all this shit, but he's starting to kind of look like a piece of crap.
Like he's starting to get like fat face and alcoholic nose a little bit.
Boy, is he.
And it's like this is only 92 compared to 88, but it seems like 4 long years.
That's for damn sure.
Like he looks like he aged almost a decade.
It's really a shame they didn't start putting world titles on him and putting him in main events until he started hitting that fucking era.
Yeah, clearly 88, breaking in with the Horsemen, that took a lot of years off his life.
Could have been. Maybe he was... It was a straight edge before that 88 run. That's why he was so hot as a babyface in 86 and 87. Never touched a drop of alcohol. And then in Barney Gumble fashion.
Yeah.
First night he spent as a horseman, it was all downhill.
Lachrymose is to dyspeptic as ebullient is to effervescent. All right, Harvard, here I come.
Psst, Barney, my dad's asleep. Want a beer?
I don't know, the SATs are tomorrow.
I've got two words for you. Mellow out, man.
All right, just one. If it'll get you off my back. Hey, where have you been all my life?
I mean, some folks, you know, a lot of folks party hard, and some folks it's obvious, and then others, it's not quite as.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, you know, we're more the Tully Blanchards and the Ric Flairs of the world.
That's right.
We're going to go hard, mm-hmm. and we're going to do awful things to our body.
100%.
You know, with our devices, but at the same time, we're going to put in that work to make sure we don't look like
we do
that.
You
got to
get back up that next morning and undo all that shit you did the night before.
I spend
that candle burning at both ends.
Like, you know, it's bad all week, but it's really bad on the weekends. So I pretty much spend my sober times during the week training mm-hmm. and preparing my body for what I'm going to put it through.
Clenching my butt muscles.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole time I'm sitting here recording this, I'm just clenching my butt muscles.
Because you're afraid of that diarrhea that might happen.
At any second it can happen.
Any second. This is a good match.
Yeah, they really just, mostly from what I was thinking when I was watching this, is they showed how you can make a match just fast-paced and kinetic. And they were bumping all over the ring.
Yeah.
They were bumping outside of the ring, fucking doing shit where, like, Austin's fucking bouncing off the ropes and then putting a knee in Wyndham, who flies off the apron and into the fucking guardrail. They're keeping it kinetic. They're keeping their bodies moving. They're keeping it exciting. But they're not degenerating into any flippy shit or any fucking bullshit where they're just, like, chaining shit together real fast for the sake of it.
Into a superpower move that never makes
sense. They're not doing any dumb stuff where one guy is either clearly like lifting the other guy up to help him do stuff or just standing around like a dumbass waiting for him to do something.
Right.
You can still have exciting matches moving fast and flying around without just fucking seeing how many flips you could do in a row to have some sort of kung fu stunt choreography thing happening that looks completely fucking fake. This is the type of wrestling I love right here more than any other wrestling. This hitting the ropes hard, fucking hitting your lockups hard, hitting each other's faces hard, fast-paced shit where you're flying, you're working hard, but you're not fucking doing fancy bullshit.
No.
Nobody's trying to look as pretty as they can look when they're flying through the air. They're just flying through the air like a big crazy asshole trying to hurt somebody.
Yeah, you know what looks pretty? Making faces and selling shit.
Oh, man. Steve Austin, one of the best ever at working a hold. He's got you in a fucking headlock. He's not sitting in it. He's wrenching it. He's throwing his fucking legs back and slamming
his
body down.
Clenching
his teeth. Yeah, facial type shit to show you how much he's fucking grinding it in. Guy, known for his brawling mostly, but just working a hold is the bread and butter
but
of what
he could
did.
Brawl the hold. That was the thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's just as aggressive in a headlock as he is when he's throwing punches.
And it's all about the sell, man. Again, was that fucking Elimination Chamber the other week or whatever?
That happened.
When I was watching it, when I was around with my family, and I forget, one of the matches ended, and I forget who the fuck it was, but somebody in my family was heard a remark like, oh, why is he fucking acting like he just, you know, got his ass kicked, like mm-hmm. he can barely walk, like the shit's fake. I was like, because it's called selling. Because
he's one of the few good ones left.
That still fucking sells, even though the match is over. He's letting people know he went through fucking something, as opposed to just getting up and being like, well, got to go sell some
t-shirts. Good, I like hearing that, but I bet I know what didn't happen. I bet the next night on Raw, nobody showed up with any body parts taped up or still showing any effects of any of that stuff.
Probably, I'm sure that's the
case.
That's
a completely fucking lost art.
Ugh.
And it makes me sick.
DDP, it's the only thing you did right. You and Tommy Dreamer.
That and fucking...
If there's two things Davey R. Scheister was worried about in the late 90s.
Tommy Dreamer's back pains.
And DDP's ribs.
So yeah, DDP, two things you did right. Taping up those ribs and figuring out how to sell yoga DVDs. You did that very well too, from what I can tell.
Yeah. This finish, I got to give credit to WCW.
Credit where credit's due here.
Because it's something that is just completely lost. Completely lost.
Talking about fucking time limits?
Yes.
There's nothing I love better than how the main event on WCW, their last match, the time limit was always TV time left.
Right. Because
that's how it would really fucking be if you had a TV show on TV.
Right.
It had to keep a schedule.
Even in the 80s, the late 80s, we came into a lot of matches where they're like, hey, 20, 25 minute, mm-hmm, and we mean it. And WWF did it too in like the mid 80s.
Sure.
But then just kind of got away from it.
Way far
Whereas
away from
WCW
it.
WCW held onto it for a long time, which is what made it feel like a sport.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, here's rules, here's rounds like boxing or this and that. Like, it's not just, hey, beat each other up until one of you can't beat each other up anymore, which is also what made things cool when you were like, hey, this match is going to be these guys beating each other up until they can't beat each other up anymore.
Yeah, I like that.
But I'm so conditioned to not believing in it anymore that I didn't think anything of it.
Sure.
And it started getting late.
Oh, the countdown's coming. So yeah, when's the finish right before the countdown?
And I'm watching and I'm like, we don't have a lot of time left here. Like, are they just going to shoehorn in like two dumb finishes to have a finish to this match? And then I heard him say, we've got 2 minutes left for the TV time limit. And I was like, oh man, they're really going to shoehorn these finishes. And like, before I could get that thought out, it was like, holy fuck, that's right, they got a TV
like
finish.
Austin was going to get the first or the second fall, and then right before time ran out, Wyndham was going to have Austin pinned, but then before that last three count happened, a time ran out. That's all. The only reason they would mention a TV like time limit at this point in history is if they were doing that finish.
Right, but it dawned on me, I was like, they don't have to do any more like near falls or nothing. Like, it can just be the story is Austin trying to beat the clock.
Yeah, because time limits used to actually run out because it was presented as a real thing.
And it worked so well. People were so
hot. Sure, now you got the storyline going that, hell, fucking Wyndham fucking pinned this guy. He wasn't able to pin Wyndham at all, and he still got the fucking title. Right. Like, this is bullshit. I want to see Barry fucking fight him again.
That last minute sequence, that last 30-second sequence where he hits him with the lariat. He's like, this pinning combination, this pinning combination, this pinning combination.
One of those.
Fuck it, here's the
one
lariat.
One of those near falls got me.
Yeah.
I thought it was a three, but then it was not.
Oh, man, it was good fucking
shit.
He
even tricked this old dog.
Nate, you silly bag.
So, yeah, that's our five count. That's our rundown of this episode of WCW Saturday Night. Coming up next is going to be the three count. But before that, some advertisements.
Commercials.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
The Boz. He's an undercover cop with his own way of turning up the heat.
You picked up the wrong passenger, buddy.
And when he decides to chill out, he's stone cold.
And then some.
Barbecue privilege can distort your worldview. I'm from Texas. I get that. So the importance of Wendy's semi-altruistic mission of bringing an abundance of quality barbecue pulled pork to the Great White North isn't lost on me. Where else are the underserved citizens of an obscure barbecue-deprived outlier like Toronto supposed to go for easy access to mouth-watering barbecue pulled pork? Calgary's two time zones away. Now, I'll be the first to admit that American culture can seem a little strange. And our blatant disregard for the metric system is somehow both quaint and terrifying at the same time. But if I can help just one hard luck resident of a barbecuely underprivileged place like Vancouver know that Wendy's new barbecue pulled pork is now perched atop a perfect plate of poutine like an army of proud flavor Mounties, well, then I've done my job. So go to Wendy's and experience your new right to Hickory Smoked Barbecue Pulled Pork with your choice of three sauces and take a second to savor just how great barbecue can be. Hey?
Consider sponsoring a friend living with barbecue inaccessibility by sharing this video.
Join Pulled Pork for Canada today.
Just another Saturday night and I ain't got nobody.
Oh, that's a fun one.
How I wish I had someone to talk to.
You hear that one?
I got
a lot when you're on like beach vacations. Yeah. I think that's maybe the only time I've ever heard that song.
That should just be our theme whenever it's Saturday night.
Yeah, every WCW like lame fucking white people resort ever, like that song's on their fucking rotation of like just the songs they play around their pool.
Oh, so yeah, okay.
Times. Just real
you're talking
times.
About the non. Okay, the lame white ones. They're not talking about the white people.
I'm not talking
lifestyle
about swingers.
Friendly.
Ones.
No,
not those ones.
Those ones just play popular music from 2 years previous.
Oh, I could see. Probably like a lot of the dance clubs in Indiana. I would imagine.
Yes, they're very similar.
Very same thing.
Yeah,
just crappy, terrible pop party music, but not the shit from right now, shit from like 2 years ago.
Right.
It's like stepping into a goddamn time warp in the state.
Like, you remember when Poker Face by Lady Gaga was hip?
Remember it very well.
Now think,
Mama, Poker Face.
Now think 2 years later and a lot of white women in their 40s really being into that song.
Yeah, just like, we're all teachers at the middle school. And
but not tonight.
We all got sitters tonight. Yep. And our husbands are having a poker game at fucking Mary's house.
But we're going to poker
each
other.
We went out dancing.
Yeah. Ugh.
They probably loved Poker Face.
Pa, 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 Poker Face, pa, pa, Poker. Did she win an Oscar?
Not that I saw, which I didn't get as deep as to look like best song or whatever. I imagine she probably had to win, like, best song for, like...
Oh, I'm gonna the assume... Song from,
if she didn't, that's an embarrassment. Like,
yeah.
Like, fucking Lady Gaga didn't win best song. Our three count.
Yeah.
Inspired this week.
By that a guy with his own booze line.
2 out of 3 falls. Steve Austin versus Barry Windham match that we all enjoyed. It's a tribute to... the owner and proprietor of Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA. We're going to take a little trip down through memory lane and talk about...
Is it Rattlesnake Brewery or is it Broken Skull?
It's some brewery out of California that he tag-teamed with. He didn't go as far as to start his own brewery. He's just got, you know... had those guys working with him, and they brought him in and had him taste IPAs. Yeah. And then he was like, this is the one I like. Put my name on it. And sell it.
One of the guys from that Supernatural show.
Is it the one who was also
in My Bloody Valentine?
The band My Bloody Valentine?
No, the movie.
That was going to blow
my Bloody Valentine 3D.
I was going to say the one who was also from Gilmore Girls.
No, the other one.
Okay.
The shorter one.
Okay.
He's got.
I don't know that I've ever seen the shorter one.
He's got his own brewery. He was in My Bloody Valentine 3D.
Yeah, I like My Bloody Valentine, but I'm not 100% certain I've seen the remake.
I saw it just a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Way better than I imagined.
Not a bad little horror film.
Especially for coming out of like the 2000s remake resurgence.
Yeah, that era of terrible horror remakes.
I'm telling you,
really bad
if
stuff.
You watch it and you consider the year, not that bad in terms of horror.
Maybe I'll buy a 3D Blu-ray player and get the 3D Blu-ray.
You could just rent the standard, but 3D, go all in.
Actually, I think if I'm not mistaken, I have a 3D Blu-ray player, just not a 3D TV. I don't have to buy that.
We'll just pretend you do.
I'll just have to go back in time 10 years when they were pretending like 3D was going to be a thing again and buy a 3D TV.
Well, he's got his own brewery in Austin, Texas.
Ooh,
and
great town for drinking beers.
Good friend of the show, Brett, who lives in Austin.
Brett the Barber?
Yeah. Brett the Barber Beefcake?
He's a talented young man.
Yeah, he got kicked out of that place.
He gets pretty obnoxious when he's been drinking. I can see that happening.
TV Supernatural kicked him out of there.
Good for him. Way to stand up for himself.
Maybe he put somebody else in a torture rack in the middle of a bar.
Could have been. Bars we hang around in, you don't get kicked out for that sort of stuff. So it was probably a shock for him moving down to Austin, Texas.
Not here. So what do we got? We got three great Austin matches.
Steve Austin. What are your fave threes? We're going all time.
You ready?
Whole career. A career retrospective.
This match, there's a lot of matches he had. Some are obvious.
Bing it. You could pull them up.
Some are obvious. Like
sometimes he wrestled like hundreds of matches a year.
That's a famous Austin match. And there might be one or two of those. There might be at least one that you and I both have just because of the importance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then knowing you... as a personal friend and as a wrestling fan, every once in a while, I'm like, here's something I might consider a deep cut, but I think it's also going to end up on Nate's list.
Ooh, wow.
And here it is. It was a time, man.
I'm going to say a little teaser to my list. Steve Austin, possibly the greatest babyface of all time.
Ooh.
Him or Hulk Hogan.
Ooh.
Every one of my matches, he's a heel. Every one of my matches.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of heel work.
Very weird. Yeah. Very weird, but that's how it hashed out. That's how it hashed out.
Don't have him on this one because I think it was technically faced during this. Right at the start of the Attitude Era, the the 97 run of Austin.
Okay.
Okay. It was forgettable to me at the time. It's been on lists since, but I can remember in the early aughts, and it might have been...
I don't remember much of the early aughts.
Might have been once he retired. What was that, 2003?
Yeah, thereabouts.
I want to say 2003 was the last year. It was either like right then or right after that. You and I were hanging out one time, and you had a copy of this match, and you're like, eh, check this out. And I was like, eh, fuck that shit. And you're like, no. You don't remember. These guys moved. And we're talking maybe 6 years removed from this match occurring. And it was on Monday Night Raw.
I bet wrestling looked completely different in those 6 years.
Yeah.
6 years from now, like you go back to 2013, I bet those shows look exactly fucking identical to the shows that they're doing right fucking now.
Right.
They just like preserve themselves in amber at some point in the fucking mid-2000s, that goddamn program.
This was a May 26th, 1997 episode of Monday Night Raw.
Oh, wow.
This is right after WrestleMania with Bret.
Okay, WrestleMania 13.
Where he's been solidified
in
as
Chicago.
A hero. Chicago. Yeah, so this is May 26th, so this is about a month or so removed. This is Austin and Michaels versus Davey Boy.
Okay.
And Owen Hart for the tag straps on Raw.
I've got vague memories of this match, but...
I can remember you and I were hanging out one
night. It's not totally clear to me.
We were bored. We were hanging out, and you were like, I got some old wrestling DVDs or tapes or whatever. And we're like, yeah, fuck it. Let's hang out, watch a little bit of that. Somehow you had this one, and you're like, let's throw it on. And I was like, ah, Davey Boy, yeah.
Yeah, that's
like,
definitely...
I don't know.
Hart in 96, the whole... Hart Foundation versus the World angle going
face
on.
To
all
heel,
great
yeah.
shit. All great shit.
Yeah, this was at the peak of it. It was basically...
I had a lot of honorable mentions from this era, but none of them quite made my list.
Austin and Michaels hated each other, but they could be partners.
Wacky 90s WWF booking.
They could be partners.
You gotta be partners
as
and you hate each other.
As long as you were going against the fucking Hart Foundation. Mm-hmm. And this match, man, like you said, what kind of wrestling do you like? People hitting the ropes hard.
Hitting it hard.
People punching each other in the face
locking
hard.
Locking up tight.
I was so jaded. I can remember clear as day going back and watching this back in 2000, whatever the fuck it was. Just already in my mind, just set to the fact that like Austin was a broken down bag
Austin's
of bones.
Austin's going to roll to the outside. They're going to brawl in the front
anymore,
row for a little bit.
And this and that and whatever. And you're like, yeah, no,
somebody's
no.
going to get thrown around the fucking announce table a little bit.
And I mean,
smoking mirrors.
Like
smoking mirrors.
I lived through Austin's run and I watched all that shit. And I was watching Monday Night Raw and Monday Night Nitro at the same time, flipping back and forth, checking to see who was going to do what. But I just... It seemed like a lifetime ago, and no, Austin was never fast. And I'm watching this match, and all four of these guys...
Back before he had knee braces on both knees.
Just
was.
Cooking all over the fucking ring. He didn't have a broken neck yet. And
yeah,
just
Davey Boy wasn't all fucking fucked up yet.
Oh, man.
He
this
was roided to the gills, but even Davey Boy could still move.
Yeah,
fucking
he was
match.
Fucking tearing it up.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just... You know, maybe I'm putting this on there because everybody else is just like at a fucking pinnacle here, even though Michaels is on the way out, but he's still.
He was.
Even Michaels getting ready to quote unquote end his career is still on an even clip with all of them.
He's Shawn Michaels selling it to like, the office more than it's actually debilitating him in the ring.
Michaels. God, Michaels, if you don't think he's the greatest wrestler of all time, I don't want to talk to you.
If there's anything that's going to like fucking, yeah, sure, the movement in the ring, the way these guys are going at each other hard, it's different from what you see these days where everything's loosey-goosey and they're all fucking helping each other out, but also just the crowd's reaction to everything.
Yeah.
The crowd is molten
these
through this
guys,
whole fucking
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, every one of them knew what their role was.
Anytime
every one of them
touches each other,
knew what they were doing.
Screaming.
And they knew how to just sell the shit out of what the other guy was doing. And big credit here, this was Austin's first major title run in the company because
They
win the straps off of the Hart Foundation.
Tag team titles.
Yeah.
Big shit. Did after they won, did Michaels and Austin stand in the ring crying? And then like...
Yeah, a lot of embracing. And we worked so hard for this.
Somebody came out to interview best friends. Them and they were like, I can't think of anything to say.
Because we're best
I'm
friends.
I'm just crying. It's such an honor to be a tag team champion.
Yep, that's how you do all title
that's
runs.
That's pathetic.
So I give big credit to this one.
My number three is also a Steve Austin tag team match. The guy, underrated tag wrestler. He really got the psychology of it. My pick... It's the Hollywood Blondes, the tag team champions, defending against a couple fresh-faced young challengers.
Jericho and Benoit, this is when Brian Pillman blows out his quad, I'm familiar.
Arn Anderson and Ric Flair.
What? We're
talking about Clash of the Champions 23. This was the one time Steve Austin was able to kiss that main event in WCW. He got a little bit
what
of
what was it? It was Clash of the Champions.
Him.
What?
23.
Was it really?
Hollywood Blondes versus Double A and Ric Flair. And what you got here?
How often were they doing these Clash of the Champions?
I mean, five
once
or
a year?
Six a year.
Five or six? Oh, that makes more
at
sense.
At the height of them, and
oh,
they
so that was
started
like,
in the mid '80s.
That was like they're in your house.
Yeah, sure. They did a lot.
All right,
of them.
I wasn't
they did a lot of them.
I wasn't a WCW guy.
So leading up to this whole match,
got all the facts.
You got the Hollywood Blondes just parodying Flair's talk show, the Flair for the Gold, by doing that Flair
okay,
for the
I do
old
know this
stuff
era.
You
here.
Got them doing a lot of parodies. You got them. Calling these guys geriatric and over
yeah,
the hill. Even,
which is great.
Even back here in 1993.
Which was still accurate.
So what that means is by the time these two teams come together for the tag team titles, you got some hints of what I like to call grudge happening in this match.
Ooh.
You know, Shivani, a lot of people seem to think that the Hollywood Blondes are just a couple of loudmouth punks. So what I have to say tonight... Come straight from the heart. Arn Anderson, you're a fat pig. You totally disgust me. Ric Flair, you're a withered up old man, and your glory days are long gone. What's the other guy's name? Roma. You're a complete idiot because no one in their right mind would put themselves in the position that you have. But don't get me wrong, Shivani. I do respect what ability they do have. But let's face it, when push comes to shove, a fat man, an old man, and an idiot don't stand a chance against the Hollywood Blondes. And at that, I have no further comment.
Which means as soon as the bell rings,
these
two
old
are
guys
going
got
at
something
each other.
To prove
these,
here.
These guys are going at each other. And another thing you got to factor in is that this is right after Ric Flair had made his big return from his run in the WWF,
yeah.
Back to the South where he belongs.
His successful, his very
so
successful
the crowd
run in the
WWF. Is fucking molten for him, just on fire. He's a babyface.
Heroes return.
So weird, so interesting to see Flair and Double A playing the babyfaces, but they are over like Rover as the babyfaces. And around here is when Austin feuding with Pillman really just amped up his fucking just smarmy dickhead heel
yeah.
Just like antics.
Pillman
like,
brought out the best.
Yeah,
in him.
Just like his facials, his theatric shit where he's just a real contemptible dickhead. And great fucking match. He got a lot of heat from the crowd, a lot of grudge where these guys are just beating the fuck out of each other. One point Arn's knee blows out, so you get a lot of classic NWA fucking limb work shit going on. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match. So at one point you get to see Flair get a fall with a flying burrito, which is just fucking weird. that's just a weird fucking thing to see. You got Jesse Ventura on color commentary, which just, you know,
always
takes it to another
good.
Fucking level. And at the end, Barry Windham runs in to break up a Flair figure four. So you got a chicken shit heel DQ. Champs fucking lose both falls, but it's by DQ the second one, so they keep the titles. The crowd fucking hates that. The crowd's ready to see Flair and Arn anointed, and you take it away from them. Just great chicken shit heel shit. All around great presentation. Amazing to see Austin and Pillman get put in that main event spot, given a chance, and have it work out so well. And then it just be like, well, never again, though. Never going to happen again.
No.
You guys not main eventers. For that shining moment, though, I'm going to say this is the pinnacle of Steve Austin in WCW. So that's why it's on my list.
That's a good one. That's a good pick right there. I stayed within what I was familiar with. Like I said, I wasn't a That's never a maybe WCW a little bit of a deep cut then.
For the youngins out yeah. there. Fire up that WWE yeah. network and check it out.
Yeah, that's good shit there. I've watched a lot of that because I've researched the old, you know, Hollywood Blondes and mm-hmm. all the Pillman shit. Mm-hmm.
Two guys who are clearly yeah. from Southern California. You can tell by their accents.
Excellent!
I got a number two. A lot of people think it's the greatest Austin match. I'm going to say it's the second greatest Austin match.
Controversial.
Just going to get right down into it. It might be one of the most iconic scenes in all of 90s wrestling.
Exactly where we're going here.
It's a Crimson Mask. A guy who refuses to give up. It's Austin. It's Bret Hart. It's WrestleMania 13.
Only good match on that miserable show.
No, it was good. LOD versus Headbanger.
I'm not
headbanger?
So certain you're remembering that correctly.
What would they have? Piper versus Goldust?
Goldust. Yeah. The Backlot Brawl?
Backlot Brawl, yeah.
That might have been that year.
You
yeah.
see, Goldust was going to run down Roddy Piper with a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
But
painted
then,
gold.
But then
gold.
Roddy Piper turned on a fire hose, and that scared Goldust. That's not what we're here to talk about, is it?
I sure hope not.
Everybody's talking about Austin versus fucking Bret Hart. And why? Because it's a great match.
You know, this is an I Quit match, correct?
Yeah.
So,
Hart...
Ends in a submission.
Bret was injured in 96, and he comes back, and his first major match is at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm, it's against mm-hmm. Austin at Survivor Series. And Austin won King of the Ring. Which
Boy,
was a big
he.
Deal,
Boy, did he.
And it was the whole Austin 316. But then he did nothing between that and Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, we made a superstar! And then they were like, yeah, we made a superstar.
Yeah.
And then Hart comes back, and
they're,
to his credit...
They're busy trying to push Roman for those next couple
right.
of months.
Austin's like, no, or Bret's like, this guy can go, I'm gonna fight him. And they have this epic match, and people are like, oh shit, this dude's a superstar. Like, he's the real deal.
Works out so good. He starts getting cheered a little bit more than Bret.
Right.
And so is the seeds for Bret turning into a bitter bad guy.
Correct.
A lot of good storytelling
coming
out of this.
Which works so great because we've said, what's the best Bret?
Oh, a heel Bret.
A heel Bret.
Greasy, oily, smarmy yeah. heel Bret.
And he's not a heel because of his own fault. He's a heel because it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
is the best Bret you can have. So you get this
real
here.
Real good at passing the buck.
And you get... It's great. It's Austin wanted to gone on to win all these, you know, Royal Rumbles and this and that. If it wasn't for this match, just solidifying the fact that this dude's 100% legit. He's a main eventer. Hart puts him over in a big way twice now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, Austin didn't win either of the matches, he's really giving him the quote-unquote rub.
He's getting that rub,
everybody,
man.
Everybody claims, like, I'm still going to give you the
getting
rub.
Greasy, oily rub.
No. But to Hart's defense, he really gave him the rub in these two matches. Like, these were the two where you're like, oh, this dude's legit main event. So I like this one. And that bloody face.
It's a great match. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about that rub going forward with my future picks.
Okay.
My number two... Happened in the year 2001. I'm going...
A space oddity.
Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle from Unforgiven
Ooh.
2001.
I almost put this one
like
on
you
there.
Saw with Bret Hart, Austin has great chemistry with guys, A, who have technical skill. They can fucking do the stand-up shit, and they can do on the mat shit, and dudes who just are freak athletes that have great motors. Guys who just, like, can go hard and hit the ropes hard and keep moving. Those are the guys he has the best chemistry with. That's fucking Angle in a nutshell.
Yeah.
These guys had a great match at SummerSlam that year, where they were doing all that weird, both guys were heels, and they were vying for Vince's affection shit.
Right.
Trading cowboy hats and whatnot.
Right.
And it was weird, and it was goofy, and it shouldn't have fucking worked. But both these guys are so good at just going from goofy and funny to, like, dead serious and, like, dangerous
Correct.
In, like, 2 seconds that somehow they made it work. This, like, pseudo heel versus heel type fucking thing.
Oh, kept a lady sing his song, do-da, do-da. Come on, ever kept a lady sing his song, all do-da-dee.
Hey, Vince. Steve, Deborah, how you doing?
Day for What are you doing? Money on the bobtail leg. Somebody been on. I'm trying to cheer up Mr. McMahon. What are you doing? You got no business being in here.
You're cheering him up singing a song?
It's chicken soup for the soul. I'm inspiration. Look at him. He's relieved. His hair's growing back. Look. Look at you.
Look at me?
It's written all over you.
What?
Look at him.
What?
You're jealous.
Of that?
You're jealous of my relationship with Vince McMahon. You're jealous of the fact that I can sing.
Hey, you can sing. I was in the Glee Club in high school. 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you play the axe?
What's the axe?
It's the guitar.
The guitar? I play the ukulele. It's got two less strings, but I think I could probably carry a tune, yeah.
You can't play the guitar.
Yes, I can.
You can't play the guitar.
Yes, I can.
You can.
Yes, I can.
You can't.
I can.
You can't.
Can.
Here. You talk me into it. Let's get over there, man. I'll help you out.
Okay, this is to cheer Vince up, right?
That's what I'm trying to do. I'll help you out.
Do you really think this is a good idea?
Well, it was till he come in.
Can you move over? You make me nervous.
Yeah.
Not the other way. You're your wife.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, I think this one will cheer you up, Vince. okay.
Sorry.
Here we go.
Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. I got Olympic gold. I got Olympic gold. I got Olympic gold. Jimmy crack corn and I don't care. Jimmy crack corn.
What?
What are you doing?
I'm trying to cheer up Vince.
Cheer up who?
Vince.
Where is he?
Where'd he go?
You ran him out of the room. You stink. You're horrible. You're pathetic.
Well, I wasn't any worse than you were. I listened to you when I walked in.
I spent a lot of money on guitar lessons. I'm great. Tell him I'm great.
Well, they didn't.
That's right.
They didn't work.
Did too?
Did not.
Did too.
Did not.
Did too.
Did not.
You heard me mention you come in here.
Is he serious?
You make me sick.
And they had a great match at SummerSlam. Everybody loved it. Rave reviews, blah, blah, blah. The reason I don't put that one over this one is because it's kind of, you know, heel versus heel. Neither guy could take a loss, so they couldn't have a satisfying ending. They did some sort of schmoz I don't even remember.
That was one of those big...
And something big
DQ
happened in between SummerSlam and this Unforgiven match. And that something was fucking 9/11, man. World Trade Centers went down.
Yeah.
Fucking... Al-Qaeda's attacking America. This has happened in 12 days, I think, after 9/11. So what does WWE do? They pull the biggest fucking carny, sleazy move ever. They use 9/11 as an excuse to turn Kurt Angle, who wears the red, white, and blue, into a 100% good guy baby face out of nowhere.
Strap him to it. And just
good guy out of nowhere, night and day. Suddenly, he's the all-around just great guy, baby face, white meat. This is in Pittsburgh, his hometown, so the crowd's fucking molten. It's 12 days after fucking 9/11, and he's draping himself in the American flag, so everybody's just fucking going nuts.
Oh, yeah, it's fever pitch, man.
Typical great fucking Austin match where they're just beating the hell out of each other, especially because they're playing Angle's neck that he broke into the Olympics in it, and Austin's just attacking his fucking neck, like, brutally, just mounting his back and just clubbing the shit out of the back of his neck over and over again. Just a lot of great shit going on in here. Good guy versus bad guy dynamic. Electric crowd. You'll never hear a louder crowd.
Here's the credit, because I fought with this match as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The credit that you get from this era that you don't get now. You said Austin was a heel coming into this.
Sure.
And he was aligned with McMahon and he's whatever. But he's a real fucking chicken shit, mealy mouth heel with Vince.
Yeah.
He's really fragile and he has to have this love and whatever.
Yeah.
And like, he's very paranoid, like Randy Savage paranoid.
He was
at this
doing
point.
A lot of Randy Savage shit in this era.
But then when he gets into the ring, He doesn't just devolve into a chicken shit heel.
No, he's desperate. He's like a caged animal.
And he turns into, you get a lot of that old badass, like, rattlesnake. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to fuck you up because I have to fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not just, like, ducking shit and running away and scared shitless. Like, he's bringing the fight to Angle, like you said. Like, you got an injury? I'm going to work on your fucking neck. That's... But he's still heel as fuck.
Part of why this works so good to put over Angle as a main eventer, because this, we talk about the rub. This match in the SummerSlam match really gave him the rub and solidified him, because at this point in time, the guys who were in the main event were real fucking protected. And you got a guy who'd never won a title going in against the guy who's been the longtime champion. He doesn't have a chance against him. They usually just beat the shit out of him handily. That's for a reason, to keep being a main eventer important. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you just got guys losing all the time who are main guys, and you put them against mid-carders, and it just feels like either one could win.
Correct.
If you got a main eventer who actually is going to fucking give a guy a lot of offense or then eventually pin him, once that pin happens, you got a new main eventer made, and that's what happened to Angle right here.
Yeah.
Because Steve Austin, just like Brett gave him the rub, he gave Angle the fucking rub.
Yep. My next one, it's a match he had multiple times with a guy, but I'm going to say it's the most
out all the kinks.
Important match that he had with said guy. And the reason I put this on there is because he went back and forth with this guy, and in this time period, I was like, well, Jesus, I don't know who's more important at this point. I'm legitimately lost. I'm talking about Austin's work with The Rock.
Oh, fucking, what'd they have? Three WrestleMania main
three
events?
WrestleManias. It doesn't...
It's a huge goddamn run.
Yeah, like, it's crazy, because, like, nowadays, like, I think, like, Roman Reigns is, or fucking Rollins is about to fight Lesnar for, like, the 1 millionth time or whatever.
Yeah.
But
not, like, them one-on-one as the WrestleMania main event.
Right. And these guys... It seemed like they went back and forth a lot, but I don't think
that Rock
much.
Rock always lost.
Yeah.
Fucking Austin
and
always
Rock
beat him.
Rock usually lost and this and that, whatever it was. But either way, when they would get together, like, you always felt lost in a way because you never knew which way they were going to go with it.
Nah, they were just both such big fucking stars. It didn't really matter who won.
Right. And you couldn't really tell. Like, it just... you kind of like just blacked out for a little bit, and it was just like the match was over, and you put the like, oh, this is where we're thinking now.
Until that,
like,
that third
happened
one,
now?
Which,
like,
ended up being Austin's last match ever.
Right.
That's when Rocky finally fucking won.
And he finally
and
does.
You don't like see it as like a big, like, oh, Rock finally won, even though that'd be a great storyline, because it didn't matter, because they had both already won, because they were both fucking
right.
Such big superstars, they didn't even have to wrestle anymore.
It didn't fucking matter. You're right. And it just was like, what is he done? I think that was his last match. Mm-hmm. I think it's over now.
So you going 17?
I'm going 17.
17's their best one.
17's
yeah, for sure.
Their best one. Both of these guys are just white heat, white hot baby faces.
Possibly
just,
the best pay-per-view of all time.
This
was the main event of it.
2001, right?
Yes.
WrestleMania 2001, aka WrestleMania 17.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these guys, meteoric hot. And like, this is the absolute end of the Stone Cold babyface run of him just making millions of dollars
sure.
in the Attitude Era.
And it's in Texas, I think.
I think you're right, yeah.
Austin's home state.
And Rock is also at the same time hugely over.
Yeah,
like
this is getting ready to become a movie star, though.
Yeah,
Rock.
This was like not just like, oh, you guys kind of like him. This was like anything The Rock did, people loved. And so you knew one of these guys was going to go heel here. And it made more sense. Like, Austin was the good guy for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, no reason why he shouldn't be anymore.
And it's in Texas.
So clearly he's going over. And Rock's proved he can be a bad guy. So just make him be a bad guy again, right? Yeah, no, what do they do? Match ends. And they have Austin shake hands with fucking Vince and solidifies he's a bad
After
guy now.
Beating the shit out of Rock like 17 times with a steel chair
right.
in the match.
And the finish makes you scratch your head at the time, like, oh, why would he do that? But you got to give it to him at the time. Like, they knew Austin was on borrowed time at this point.
Mm-hmm.
they knew Rock was younger and could go longer. Maybe he was going to leave and become a star, but like, you got to strap your company to that.
They had good intentions coming out of it as far as the storyline, right, where Stone Cold is playing that character who knew that he didn't quite have it anymore.
Right.
So now he was going to have to start like fucking
selling
taking cheap shots
bit,
and selling his soul to stay on top because he was addicted to it. But then like so many weird things happened in 2001 that all the storytelling just fucking fell apart.
But like, this worked.
They haven't found their way back ever
for
since.
What it was, man.
Stories were never the same again.
This was just good shit, man. Like, it ushered in a new era of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
It put over the fucking Rock as the guy, the main man.
They had great chemistry already, and then you factor in their just like insane star power, and
right,
then you put it as the main event of one of the biggest WrestleManias ever, and it's just like, well, that's one of the biggest wrestling matches of all time, I'd say. Fucking WrestleMania 17, Rock versus Austin.
And Austin, you gotta give him credit. You're talking about a guy that came back from huge injuries. You know, he comes back in 97. He's
got Owen Hart broke his neck.
And then he comes back in like 2001 here. Because I want to say he was injured.
Plus, he had all those cuts and bruises from that time. Deborah slapped him around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was a bitch, man.
Fuck her.
Just multiple times throughout his career, like, the dude was like, well, I got to change up how I wrestle.
Slow down a notch. Got to slow down a notch.
For him, like, he, like, goes into this heel character and allows him to change it up a little bit, but allows him to fucking turn on the gas when he has these matches with Angle and SmackDown with fucking Benoit and shit, and he does some other things. But like, Austin always understood the wrestling game, always understood his limitations, and always knew what his role was in the fucking ring.
And he's like, I can't do it at top level anymore.
So I'm not going to do it
bye-bye.
At all.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I got millions of dollars. Don't need to keep fucking trotting my ass out there.
Yeah. I'd rather just walk the rest of my life.
My number one, it's a personal favorite, Austin versus Benoit. SmackDown, May 31st, 2001.
Oh, yeah.
So you talk about the rub again. You talk about making main eventers. That's what Austin was all about.
Is this the one that's in Edmonton?
It is in Chris Benoit's hometown of Edmonton.
This is a barn burner.
Jericho Benoit, basically mid-carders for life. And then 10 days before this, they have that big match where Triple H tears his quad.
Correct.
H and Austin put over Benoit and Jericho for the tag titles. They basically make these guys main eventers in one match. That might be the best Raw match of all time.
That might be the best thing that ever happened to Jericho of all time.
Red Hot, Jericho and Benoit, these new Red Hot guys. Austin still got the world title. So what happens? The next match, this is the era of just hotshot booking, burning everything out on TV.
Yep.
You got Jericho is going to fight Austin for the title on Raw, I think. And then I think I remember this, how it's happening. And Benoit's fighting him for the title on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Jericho fights him on Raw, fucking shits the bed. Match sucks. These guys have no chemistry. It's like that match with Steiner and fucking Triple H where they just threw 1 million suplexes and had no idea what to do. This is just Austin and Jericho.
One of us has got to sell. I'm not fucking doing
it. Just Austin and Jericho chopping the shit out of each other's chests the entire time and like not being able to come up with anything else. It was awkward. Derailed Jericho's red hot fucking push here.
Yeah.
So then Benoit gets his shot, and oh my God, does Benoit rise to the occasion? Well,
of course, Jericho's getting the better push because he's taller.
It's that long blonde hair. You know, Vince loves that.
Yeah.
So Benoit, like we've seen with Brett, like we've seen with Angle, you put him in Austin in there with a freak athlete and a guy who can take it to the mat or you can brawl with you standing up, guys who can hit the fucking ropes hard, great chemistry. This match is insane. The crowd is fucking nuts.
This is what year again?
2001. This 2001, is in May, right. So this is like a good number of months before that Angle match.
Right.
Austin's grabbing sharpshooters to troll this Edmonton crowd.
Oh, yeah. He's all in.
Benoit, like a fucking champ, is working the taped ribs angle to get fucking babyface sympathy out of there. And like he was attacking
working
Angle's
from underneath.
Neck, Austin's just stomping the living shit out of Benoit's
working from
fucking
underneath.
Ribs. Benoit was poised to be like a killer for years before this. If anybody would have just booked him to be. The problem was, he always gave too much in his matches, and people didn't give enough back, so he just never looked like he could do it. Austin's like the first
this
legit
match
main eventer
was
to just let Benoit
correct.
Beat the holy hell out of him.
I'm going to beat the fuck out of you, Benoit, but you're going to get this huge length of time to just make me look stupid.
Just made him look like a fucking killer. The audience is so into it, they start counting his fucking rolling Germans so loud.
Yes.
This is when he develops the, I'm not just doing three rolling Germans, I'm just going to keep doing it while you count endless Germans thing. This is basically where Benoit, like in the middle of the ring, in the middle of his match, found his main event character and just rode this to WrestleMania 30 when they finally gave him the belt.
Which Brock Lesnar borrowed later down the year.
Sure.
Down the road.
So you talk about giving somebody the rub.
Gives him 10 German suplexes.
10
in this
Germans,
match.
Yeah. Benoit doesn't win the match.
But he wins the battle, damn it.
It ends kind of funny. He's got him in the crossface. Crowd's going crazy. Vince is the outside enforcer.
He
runs in and breaks it up. So then Benoit just gets a fucking chair and just starts laying into Vince. Gives Vince probably like 12 or 13 real hard just chair shots. And then when he's done with it, Austin just rolls him up real ginger for a quick roll-up pin, and then he bails out of the ring real quick, and that molten crowd's just completely deflated. Like, going into this, like, 2 weeks before, the idea of Benoit winning the title is just insane, never gonna happen. And
right.
this match, everybody, like, every near fall is insane.
It was like,
everybody thought it was gonna happen.
Benoit's winning it. They're
These guys
doing it.
Killed each other. He made Benoit a fucking main guy, and just, like, that whole year, like, maybe one of the greatest WWF title reigns of all time doesn't get the acknowledgement he does because the stories started falling apart so much throughout. Triple H goes down, derails that shit.
Yeah.
They try to do the invasion stuff and that doesn't work out. That derails everything. 9/11 derails everything and you fucking suddenly angle. Like everything just kept getting
Austin
derailed.
Austin was just doing
actually
work.
Matches though, just doing work,
putting
guys
over
making new main eventers. One of the greatest title reigns all time, 2001. Steve Austin.
I'm glad we're on the same page there. Where are we at next week?
Next week, we're coming in hot.
What?
The new superstars.
What?
May 2nd, 1992.
Oh, that's nice.
Get ready for it. It's going to be hot action.
I'm Baby Oil and Blow. Stay single.